it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Off the Woodwork podcast section, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. For those that may not be familiar, the SDH Network runs a morning show from 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, and this is our eighth season of doing it. And what we like to do in the morning show, after the morning espresso that Jason Longshore sends out first thing in the morning, is we kind of set your day. We go over what you might have missed when it comes to action either on the weekend, early in the week, or in the week from overseas, and we set you up for your day. We do have a list of experts that we bring in every once in a while, and then we have some guests that we bring to the table for topical stories and things like that, and we can tap them on the shoulder and we can sit there and go, you know, we want you to explain what's going on in your part of the world. And this week is no different here on the Best of SDHAM. Casey White drops by and she gets to break down everything in women's soccer, SEC, ACC, college soccer. It's all there. She gets into a bit of a breakdown from some action in the week past in Major League Soccer with her time with Charlotte and New England, and lets us know what else is going on. There were some interesting pieces of news in the NWSL on the field and off that we get into with Casey as well. So when she comes to visit, we cover everything going on. One of the busiest people in show business, and it's great to catch up with Casey every single week on Tuesdays when her schedule permits. Then also is the Friday Free Kick. And when we have the Friday Free Kick, it's with our friends at Beyond Goals Mentoring. We either get to catch up with Greg Garza or Michael Parkhurst and find out what's going on in their world and kind of take the issues of today within the sport of soccer and try and apply it to what's their messaging and what their conversations are with their mentees. We do discuss the Luis Suarez situation and how that translates into conversations with mentees and how things are progressing with Beyond Goals Mentoring, and just kind of weave through the issues of the day and things that they may see and how it applies to their teachings and their lessons and what their mentees get to learn. So Michael Parkhurst on the show this week. And then also it's something kind of cool to wrap things up. Atlanta United 2 has a friendly scheduled with Belize, the Belize national team, and it's set for behind closed doors on the weekend with Atlanta United 2 at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta Training Ground. And with Belize's national team coming to this country and in turn hanging out with Atlanta United 2, we wanted to kind of get a behind-the-scenes look at the national team, see what's going on, and just kind of get some background as to what's been going on with the national team. And so we got a visit from the Minister of Youth and Sports from Belize, Devin Daly. We got to catch up about their trip to the States, what they were looking for with Atlanta United 2 when it comes to building the program, what's going on there, and just talking about youth engagement and the growth of athletic programs in general. So this week, Casey White, Michael Parkhurst, and the Minister of Youth and Sports from Belize, Devin Daly. Let's start you off with our conversation with Casey White. Casey traditionally is our leadoff hitter on Tuesdays, but because of being in a hotel encased in concrete, we have slid back to where she is in the Casa de Casey, because we will catch up with her here now. Jared has seen the Utah Royals win a game, and the NWSL in and of itself has had excused absences, which I thought was really interesting because of players being courted by Chelsea. You got to call Cali Classico NWSL style. What has the vibe been like getting ready and knowing that folks might be leaving on transfers?
I think that, one, it's big news that those rumors are out there that that could happen for Angel City with Alyssa Thompson. What was really nice to see from an Angel City perspective, from an NWSL perspective, when I was on the call, was that Angel City had players step up, to be quite honest, and that's what they have to do. And Alyssa Thompson, if she does end up leaving, and if those rumors end up being true, is a big loss. We all know that, but you have to figure out how to do it by committee, or someone has to step up. And I was pleasantly surprised at the role of Riley Tiernan in that game for Angel City. As a rookie, she's leading the team in goals. She was doing that coming into the game. But what I was impressed with, it wasn't just her goal. And I was on the call actually for Bay FC RSN. So it was kind of interesting because I was on that call for those in the Bay Area. But I loved everything about her goal. But what was actually most impressive was she started to take on more of a playmaking role as well than we've seen in this season. That's what she did in college. She played more in the 10. Now she's playing in the 9 up top. But she molded those two roles together really well in this game. And that's needed, honestly, for someone to step up in the absence of someone like Alyssa Thompson.
Jarrett, Utah, 2-11-5 at the bottom of the table, looking up at everybody else. Your question for KCD about the NWSL is what, sir? We might have stunned him.
Oh, no. Jarrett. We lose Jarrett.
There's happier things to talk about. No, there's happier things to talk about than whatever the Utah Royals are doing at any given moment, although they won recently, so that was exciting. But I guess sticking with the Cali side of it, as much as we talk about the on-field, you know, this change of players possibly getting these big offers and making these moves, you know, how is it for the clubs, especially a newer club like Angel City? And I mentioned club anymore, but to find that balance to being a selling club while potentially a selling club while also making that next step forward and being a mover and a shaker nationally and internationally.
I think there's a couple of things at play here. One is that the NWSL has always talked about, whether everyone believes it or not, or whether they follow through with it or not, that they want the players to have the ability to do what they want to do with their careers. And that was a big step of eliminating the draft. And I think that these moves are good in a lot of ways for the players, of course, but also in supporting the player moves, the profile of the league, the ability to be connected worldwide, I think just continues to grow, which that kind of, I'm not a business person, so I don't think of it that way. I just think of it more as growing from a namesake and a league perspective. So I always think that is great. But I also think at play with Angel City is that you bring in someone like Alex Strauss, who has been very vocal about it takes time to build championship clubs. And I think they know they can do that with Alyssa Thompson, but it may just be what's best for the player in this moment as there's movement towards wanting a new challenge potentially. And we don't know because nothing's confirmed. But I think that he has a long-term vision of building a club up. And it may not happen in a week, a month from now. In speaking with him, he's very clear about that and has that history of knowing that it doesn't just happen overnight. And so I think it's really interesting because you can look at it from a lot of different angles. It definitely puts a strain in the short term. When you lose a player like Alyssa Thompson, it makes it really difficult. But I think that they're trying to have a longer term vision, at least from a coaching staff perspective. And it looks like potentially front office as well.
Orlando has not been shy about breaking the bank. And I don't think we had the chance really to break down their transactions, where Arsenal and Liverpool, you know, they sit there and they're going to, you know, swap Olivia Smith out for 1.3. Orlando breaks out their Lee Corso, Ticonderoga number 2 pencil and goes, "Not so fast, my friend." And they drop
Lee Corso reference. I love it.
Hey, but I mean, literally, it's like Orlando decides that they're going to break that record of 1.3, bringing in Lisbeth Ovalle, who is a part of El Tri. And so we get into this idea of, okay, let's build. It's interesting that you're seeing clubs shelling out seven figures now in the NWSL. It's something that has grown to this point. But when you look at Orlando and Lisbeth Ovalle and what that might bring to the table, whether we were talking on the field or off, what do you think these seven-figure transfers mean to the league in general, and then Orlando bringing in a Lisbeth Ovalle?
I think it means everything. The fact that women's soccer is here and it's viable and there's money to be placed into women's soccer is a great testament. And so I love seeing that. It does put even more pressure on the players. But that's what we've asked for in this environment, is to have the investment and to show what women's sports can be and what women's soccer can do. So from a more long-term piece and a bigger vision, I think it's great. Ovalle, I think, will be very impactful. We don't know what that impact is going to look like. Is that going to be a lot of goals in replacing Banda being out? Is it going to be goal contributions of both, goals and assists? Or is it going to be more playmaking? I think there's going to be a little bit of everything with her. She has so much quality. I think she'll fit into the system that Seb Hines likes to play, with a lot of fluidity and movement and not necessarily rigid systems. So she fits what they're doing. And then it just raises the bar to the rest of the league of the investment that they've made in bringing her here.
Jarrett, next question's for you. Topics are wide open. It can be NWSL, college, or Major League Soccer with Charlotte, New England.
No, we're going to stick right there, because you bring up the ambition, those decisions to spend money. We know Orlando's not shy about it, but without a draft going forward and with giving players kind of more about that autonomy, how do you see some of these clubs making themselves appealing to those top-level young players coming in, where they're going to have more freedom of choice? How do some of these other clubs make themselves an appealing option for them so that they can compete, or are they just going to have to, you know, kind of buck up and go for it more often?
Money. I mean, I have to say that the reality is, when they, what starts to happen when a player makes the amount of money that players are starting to get, or transfer fees are happening, inevitably, as a human being, if you're also a player that's close to that level or at that level, you're starting to think, well, I could do that too. And so money talks. And I think that that's important. We can't deny that piece. But these clubs also have to show an investment into the player, into the person, into the human being. I think Orlando has made really big strides in doing that. Angel City's another club as well, where these players talk about how they're just taken care of. And that was a big conversation piece in the NWSL. It does really matter. And so, yes, winning matters. Yes, money matters. But if you can get those pieces right, and the vision that the coach, you know, says to the player of what they want to build, what they want to do, that helps. But ultimately, I do think players do still care about being in a place that they enjoy being in as well, as long as they have the other stuff as well. We're going to compete for championships. Money's not going to be an issue, and go from there.
All right, KCD's hanging out with us. We have three topics on the board, one topic away. Now we go to the second topic, Major League Soccer. You and Jess, the Wonder Twins, called Charlotte and New England up at Foxborough. And you've had a couple days to think about that one. What sticks in your head from that matchup off the top?
Oh, there's so much. What direction do I go with this?
Casey, it's your segment. You can do whatever you want.
I know. I have so many thoughts in this head. I have so many thoughts. So one, it was a wonderful time with Jess. I have to say that. I mean, I know she's an OG here, and we love just being able to travel together, hang around, and then on top of it, call a game and watch football. That's great. So we love that. This was an interesting game. It somewhat played out how I initially thought it would, where they would be tight in a lot of areas, but it would really be finishing efficiency, because that's something that has eluded New England, but not necessarily Charlotte. Charlotte has figured out ways to win, and they've been really good in and around their box, whether it's been a lot of opportunities or a few. What did surprise me a little bit was New England had the majority of possession. That was the one question mark I had, was both of these teams are really comfortable in out of possession shape and counterattacking. They can both possess, but they're really comfortable in that. And Charlotte just went on the road and was really composed, let New England have the ball. But it was one of the things that really stood out to me towards the end of the game was we had a shot chart, and New England had the vast majority of shots. But besides their goal, their shots on target were all outside of 20 yards. But they had so many shots in the 18-yard box that were not even on frame. And so they had really good play. I thought New England looked good in that game. They had the majority of possession, but they could not put shots on target. And that really was their downfall because they let Charlotte linger in.
Jared, on Charlotte and New England, what sticks in your mind from this matchup? Charlotte, the 2-1 win up in Foxborough.
Honestly, it's the fact that I can't figure out Charlotte. Because early in the season, it was a team that I thought was playing over its head. Then they came crashing back down to earth over the summer at terminal velocity. But then it just seems like they kind of picked themselves up, dusted themselves off. And, you know, to Case's point, like, they've figured out how to win. And it doesn't always have to, it's something we talk about all the time here with Atlanta. Like, it doesn't have to be pretty. You get to a point where you don't have to win pretty. All that matters is the 3 points you're putting in the board for sure. They're in fourth place, but they've kind of figured this out. Does that change what they can be for a playoff team and what their ceiling?
So what do you think the ceiling is for Charlotte?
Well, if you talk to Dean Smith, he says they want to win a trophy. They want to win trophies. They want to be at the top of the East. They want to compete. And so that's what he believes the ceiling is. And to Jarrett's point as well, they are just finding ways to win. They've had a long stretch where they had to score a lot of goals because they were giving up goals in order to get wins. Now they're starting to get shutouts. They didn't against New England. They did give up the equalizer, but they use one set piece after a huge save from Kalina to go down within 30 seconds and score. That was a game-changing save. So you need your goalkeepers to make the saves they're supposed to, and then also make the big one. And that's what they did. Then you've got to have players show up on set pieces, moments. The longer they go in the season and into playoffs, the margins get smaller and smaller. And so I actually think a team like this is incredibly scary to come up against because they are adaptable and they've shown they can win in a variety of ways. And so usually when you have a team that's all about possession and movement, you know what you're going to get. With Charlotte, I think it's a little bit more unpredictable.
We've seen the development of a lot of young players in Charlotte through their time at Crown Legacy and MLS Next Pro. And one of those is Adelson Melanda at the back. And I think that Melanda is providing a decent amount of cover for Tim Ream. That back line of Marshall, Ruddy, Melanda, Ream, and Byrne is what you got to see for Charlotte. And I think that Ream is being protected, at least in the lineup at points, by Dionne and Ashley Westwood. How difficult, I guess, how impactful is Melanda to you? And then when he goes to Middlesbrough after this season is over, it's going to present an interesting test for Dean Smith about how to fill that hole at right center back.
He was imperative to the way they played because so many aerial challenges and clearances were coming into the box. And he was there and he met the challenge every time. Yes, in the run of play, he's important, understanding how to step the line, how to protect space behind, all those types of things, 1v1 defending, cover. But it was his box defending and organization that were the big moments in that game because New England did establish possession. That back line, when Toffolo is able to come back as well, becomes even better and better in the attacking sense. But you're right. I think Dean Smith is going to have a big question of who to fill in that spot because he has just brought a presence defensively. He has the mobility to be able to cover in space. And if there are any mistakes, he is able to make up for that. So that will be something looking towards the future that Charlotte will deal with.
Jared, are you still fighting mountain ranges? Or are you in valleys or are you in peaks?
I'm always in a valley. I literally nestled up against the mountains, like terminally here. I-15 is not for the weak of heart.
No, especially at night. Anything else on Charlotte, New England from your perspective, or do you want to head to college soccer in the SEC and the ACC?
Are you asking me, or is that to Jared?
I'm asking Jared. Where does Jared?
I thought you were asking Jared, but he's in a valley, so we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So tell you what, let's go to college soccer. And my first question for you is, let's start with the matchup that you're getting a call. See, there we go. See, he kind of does Irish goodbyes and things like that. Depending on
he's over us.
Yeah, pretty
he's
much.
Over us.
Pretty much how this works. I want to break down the match that you're going to be calling, or that it's either past tense or present tense. I forget. So you got another crossover in your dossier, and it is another go run at Carolina and Alabama. What are you looking? What sticks out in this one from Carolina and Bama for you?
They both need a signature win on the season. That's what this game is. And in my opinion, you have a team in Alabama that is 5-0, but they haven't had to play the kind of competition that they're going to come up against this weekend with UNC Duke on the docket, plus getting into SEC play. So they're looking for one of those types of signature wins. They beat Michigan, but Michigan has since lost to Western Michigan, and they're having a bit of a rough start. So to me, that's not a big win. That's not a signature win by any means, but coming into UNC or into Duke on Sunday would be big for Alabama. But if you flip it for the Tar Heels, they're the same way. They've beaten the mid-major programs that they need to beat, but they've lost to the two SEC schools. So now you have a 5-0 Alabama coming into your home field. So for me, this is about them figuring out who they are. And this is another test for the Tar Heels to play an SEC school. They're not going to want to go 0-3 versus SEC in non-conference play. So there's more goal scorers now for North Carolina. I think both of these teams honestly have the ability to win. Carolina has the advantage being at home, I believe, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything if Alabama comes in and plays the way that they are capable of as well.
Where's your new mug?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. I have a third mug. Look at this. Oh, it's so pretty.
Yeah, see, you're stacking up your UNC mugs. It's like that's.
I know. I took into heart what you said, and now I have three. I won't have a new one next week, but I do have three.
Okay. For every match that you call at North Carolina, you've got to come back with a new mug. I guess
perfect. This is my only one right now. I don't know if I have any more this year, so we'll see. If I do, then I'll get another one.
What in the wide world of sports has gotten into the University of Tennessee? They are 5-0 out of the blocks, and they put up some big numbers offensively. And the numbers that they have scored are bordering on the insane. And I think it's 18 goals that they've scored, I think, in the 5 wins so far this year. And the goals allowed is a minuscule number as well. What has gotten into UT this year?
I have no idea, honestly. I think sometimes when you're building programs, though, and I can only have conjecture on this, is that you work for this for years. And then maybe there's a player or two that just is that extra that you need, whether it's a defensive player or a goal scorer, that is the extra you need as you've been building to take you over the top. And I think that's what they're experiencing right now. They've been good for a couple of years. They've been competitive, and they've caused problems throughout the SEC, and they've been able to do that. But this year is something completely different. So I think they're really just reaping the rewards of a lot of work with Joe Kurt over the years, but also adding in a couple players here and there has to help.
Oklahoma out of the blocks at 6-0. You look at Oklahoma, South Carolina's 5-0-1. Kentucky's out of the blocks at 5-1 as well. You got a lot of teams that are over 500 taking advantage of the non-conference schedule. When you look at the other unbeatens like in Oklahoma, is that 6-0 just because of competition? Did they set themselves up to get into an ease into conference play? What's up with Oklahoma going 6-0?
You're killing me with this SEC talk. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm the ACC in a second, so I'm just.
I'm totally messing. I'm kidding. I had to give you a hard time. So Matt Mott has now been there a little bit long. It's not just 1 year, so he's been building as well. He has a really good reputation of building programs. Had a great career at Ole Miss as well, and so I think part of it is like what I was saying with Tennessee, is that sometimes it just takes a little time to get your identity going, get players in that fit the style of play that you want to play. With all of these teams, there's a bit of a mixed bag with how they handle non-conference play, which we've spoken about in the past, where there's a couple that really test themselves in either exhibitions or non-conference play, and they may not have as good of a record, but they're battle-tested as they come down the stretch. And then there's others that may not have as strong of a non-conference schedule, but they're building confidence and they're figuring that out, or at least that's the hope of the coaching staff. But we won't really know which of those pays off for these teams until we get into those SEC and ACC games to see which approach worked for which program. So I have been noticing that about Oklahoma. I did coach there back in 2012 through 2014 as an assistant coach, and it's a great place It's a wonderful campus, sports university, and they just haven't quite figured out how to be on the national level. And so I always watch from afar, and I saw their record as it keeps going. They keep getting wins. So they're a school I'm really interested to watch when they get into SEC play. Does that continue?
ACC on the women's side, Stanford has scored 25 goals in their first five matches. They've only given up two. They're unbeaten. Duke's unbeaten. Notre Dame has outscored. They've got a plus 16 in goal difference in their four wins. Virginia's only given up one goal in their five matches so far. Louisville has scored 27, and they've given up only four. They're 5-1. Florida State, they're 2-0-1. They're just getting their schedule started. You got to see FSU early on this year. You've got a bunch of other teams that are hanging above 500. ACC women's side, what sticks in your head?
Well, one thing that sticks out to me is the amount of goals. I don't think that's necessarily the strangest thing I've ever seen, because it does depend on who you're playing, and sometimes those goals just pour in. But there are certain teams and programs that are getting more than they normally would, like a Louisville. Like that sticks out to me. When you tell me Stanford has the amount of goals they have, in some ways I'm like, wow, that's crazy. And in other ways, I'm like, well, it's Stanford, and the players that they have can definitely score goals depending on their matchup. So Louisville definitely stands out to me. Karen Ferguson Days has been there forever, and love what she does with that program. So that one will be a unique one to watch to see if they can keep that going. And obviously the goals probably won't stay the same as going into ACC play, but can they turn that into wins? You know, I hate to mention it, but Florida State had that tough match against Kansas for them. Yeah. But Kansas is a good program. They have not competed as much nationally, but Nate Lee going in there, a really respected coach. And I only caught the last probably 20 minutes of that game, and it was just a bit disjointed, but that happens with really good attacking teams. And the reality is Florida State still looked great in that game. And so I have no worries about Florida State, but it is an interesting result.
And we thank you for that analysis when it comes to one of the best schools on the planet, Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida.
Hey, you know, I talk about my own Tar Heels losing, so I couldn't avoid that. It wasn't a bad result by any means, but I couldn't avoid it.
One other story that I wanted to discuss with you a little bit, and literally it was just in the research that I had this morning, and it was overseas, and it's a story out of The Guardian. Minimum salaries are being introduced in the Women's Super League and WSL2 this season and will stop second-tier players needing part-time jobs on the side, according to the chief operating officer for WSL football. WSL2 moves to fully professional criteria, and its minimum salary floor has been agreed in collaboration with the Professional Footballers Association. Previously, average salaries were understood to be so low at some clubs, many second-tier players needed additional income from jobs such as teaching or physiotherapy. NWSL has a min of €48,500 this year. WSL has not revealed minimum salaries for WSL and WSL2, but the figure will be different for specific age groups and different in each division. And so they wanted to focus not on a part-time job and the pressures that come with it, so players focus on energies can be on being the best footballer that they can be. So really cool stuff that is coming out of the Women's Super League and WSL2, where now those players, especially in the second division, won't need a part-time job.
This is great. It's wonderful news. I remember back playing in the WPS, and I was under a national team contract, so then we were protected by a minimum in the league, because that was at the time you got paid by both, because neither one was paying a big amount necessarily, but we were protected, and there were very small minimums, like low. And I remember clearly putting our starting 11 out for this game and realizing that two or three of the players were also waiting tables. And this was at the highest level, and they were doing it because they needed part-time jobs, and they needed to do that because they weren't protected. But these were contributing players in a league that had Marta, that had all these top players in the country, in the world, just like the NWSL does now. And there was no protection for that. So what this does over in England is so big, because it allows the growth of the game. These players now get to invest everything they have into being the best they can be. That only makes the domestic league better. It only makes the national teams better over there for England, but also internationally, it just grows the game because the commitment level and what they're able to do, because the financial part is more taken care of, is great. You don't lose as many players because it's just too tough. We lost a lot of talent because there weren't additional pro opportunities. And that was even happening just in the last couple of years. And because there weren't minimums. So people were training all day and going to work at night and having to get up for training. That is not the recipe for the best product from a professional women's soccer standpoint. So things like this, especially outside of the United States, seeing people take charge in that is great for women's football.
All right. So we know that Carolina and Alabama is on your dossier for the weekend. Is that the only focus you have? Do you just get to spend time watching other stuff, or are you busy, or the busiest person in show business?
I have four additional games this weekend. So it's a crazy weekend. I'm calling all out of studio in Florida. So nothing on site. I have UNC versus Alabama tomorrow at Dorrance Field. So I will be there for that. Then I have a USL championship game on Friday night, Phoenix Rising and Las Vegas Lights. And I'm not going to go through every game, but I do have two USL Super League games as well. One on Saturday night, one on Sunday. And then I have a doubleheader on Sunday. I have an NWSL World Feed game Sunday night. And I'm not going to remember every game off the top of my head, even though I have it all listed, because it's one game at a time. But yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot going on this weekend, 5 games in 4 days. So I'll be busy.
Yes. And when you come back on Tuesday to bat lead off, we'll talk about the Super League. We'll talk about NWSL. We'll talk about college and whatever else is on your mind, because busy weekends mean that we have jammed segments with you.
Sounds good.
As always, it's great to see you. Glad that you are not in a hotel encased in concrete and having to go to a local establishment to try to get a Wi-Fi signal.
Thanks for your patience. I appreciate it. And the Wednesday slot, I appreciate that.
No, it's all good. So be good, be safe, have fun calling matches. We'll catch up with you on Tuesday, and we'll knock it all down and build it all back up. Thanks for dropping by.
Sounds good. Bye.
There goes Casey. And so Casey D, she's busy.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Always great to catch up with Casey and get her perspectives on everything that she covers, whether it's women's soccer, men's soccer, college soccer, it's all there. And we get to catch up with Casey and find out about it on a weekly basis. This is the best of SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for dropping by, as you always do. And as we mentioned earlier on in the show, it's an opportunity for us on a weekly basis when they are not conquering the world and making sure that their mentees are all squared away for the weekend, we get to catch up with either Mr. Garza or Mr. Parkhurst and find out what's going on within the confines of Beyond Goals Mentoring and find out about the issues of the day and apply it to contextual learning when it comes to Greg and Parkey as mentees. So we kind of wander through some of the headlines, we wander through some ideas, and it comes out the other side as giving advice for not just mentees, but for the adults around them and for the adults that might be around them. Here's our conversation with Beyond Goals Mentoring's Michael Parkhurst. Time to go check in with our buddy Parky and find out what the latest is. There he is, the MIT. There, you see, it's like, and literally with the monitor here in front of me, I literally have to squint, and I'm going, Parky, it looks like halftime. Good morning. I'm 700 years old, and I don't have my glasses on, so I have to sit there and go, Parky HT? But no, it's the mogul in training. All right, mogul in training. So what's the latest with what's going on with Rhode Island FC? We have to catch us up with what's going on there in USL Championship. I know it's a street fight in the Eastern Conference trying to stay above the playoff bar. What's going on with your friends at RIFC?
Yeah, I paid them a visit last weekend. Went up there, had to show face and give a little motivational speech. I said, guys, we have to win this game so that I can go on with John and make sure that Dell understands that even though they're having a really good season, can't beat us. That was a good trip, though. It was good to be up there and see the team. It's been a tough season for us. We've underperformed for sure, fighting for the playoff spot. And we're right there. I think tied maybe for eighth, or maybe somebody jumped us last night. I can't remember, but we're right there. But we played Charleston last week. We played Louisville this weekend. So it's back-to-back tough games. But, you know, we did it against Charleston. We won 1-0 to Dell's point. We had 32% possession. And honestly, we are a team that the statistics say the less we have the ball, the more points we get. And I don't think we've ever lost a game when we've had like less than 45% possession or something like that. Really strange. So, we'll see. Hopefully Louisville have the ball a lot.
Well, I mean, literally with a group like that, you sit there and it's like, you know what, Danny, all you've got to do is just, I'm just not feeling it. You just, Danny, it's yours today. You just sit there, just kind of kick it long. Because there's a game that I'm reminded of in a particular part of New Jersey where Atlanta United just didn't want the ball. It's like, you know what? Tell you what, you don't like having the ball. Tell you what, we're going to give it to you anyway. It's just like, you got to do all the work. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It's just like, look, you got to do all the work. You try to tire the guy out, try to force them to be clinical. And then the more that things don't happen, the more that you're looking at them pressing and trying to figure out, okay, we really got to do something. And pressure amplifies. And you're just kind of sitting there going, okay, keep it going. You're doing great. You're doing great not scoring. And we can see things kind of tightening up. So no, I get where you're coming from in that aspect.
Yeah. It's tough to break down a low block. And, there's a quality difference obviously between MLS and USL. So, you know, it's even tougher probably for USL teams to break down a lower block. And, obviously you can play on the counterattack. So we'll see. Del, thank you. Please do us a favor and beat Indy this weekend. Have a nice bounce back game at home. But it was important. I was up there. We had a lot of decisions to make looking at next year and contracts and players. And we got the deadline, the roster freeze coming up on Monday, I believe. So figuring out if we're doing anything between now and then. And so a lot of good stuff was done. Got to see the team take a W and see some family while I was up there. So it was a great trip. And hopefully we can make a nice run like we did at the end of last season and head into the playoffs.
Yep. 22 matches played. And right now you're 2 points out. You're below the playoff bar at 24 points. So there's some
Indy passed us on Wednesday night.
Yeah. So there's some work that's got to be done. When you're talking to as a mogul in training and as an ex-player and as a part of an ownership group, I mean, you're coming at it from a couple of different levels. When you're having conversations with those players, I mean, obviously you want your advice to be taken to heart and you don't want to put any, you don't want to add any pressure to those individuals that you're talking to in a situation like this. It's like, look, just, trust in yourself, do your thing. But I would also imagine that with those players that are under contract to your organization, they're probably, yes, they're taking all that info to heart, but at the same time, they understand the gravity of it and they're trying not to press, but I think they're pressing at the same time. It's a delicate balance for these guys in this situation right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had that kind of internal battle when we've got a player who was very good for us last year, who's struggling a bit this year. And I was debating about whether I have a conversation with him because I want to come to him as a former player and as a mentor and, give him a little bit of help and guidance and stuff. But I, it's tough to see, to know if they see, if they are able to see me like that, or if they just see me as, you know, co-founder, co-owner, whatever type thing. But I ended up having a conversation with him, and he's a fantastic human being. But yeah, it's difficult probably to, you know, wear the different hats and, you know, sometimes view things one way and view things the other way. But I think in general, we just want to view things like good human beings. Like, for example, we decided to pick up the options on a couple guys early, right? There's no incentive for us to really pick up an option for somebody for next year right now. Because, you know, gosh forbid somebody gets injured and you know that they're going to miss most of next season, you know, that can affect decisions. But we said, you know what? These guys have been good. We want them to be here next year. Let's just do it now and give them the peace of mind. And so, you know, you just try and make decisions being good human beings and knowing how it can be perceived on the other side of things. So, yeah, that's how we try and do things.
And I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a good person. And that rubs off on an individual, and then word gets around because mm-hmm. you're in a situation where, hey, you know, yeah, you don't have to do it, but you do it. And then you add confidence to the individual on a couple of different fronts. You're adding confidence to that individual. It's like, okay, they trust in me. And if they're having a slow year, what they believe in me that I can do. They're investing in the future of me, and they're investing in the person of me. And so all of that rubs off. And so you never know who that particular player can talk to. You never know who the friend, those are friends for that player. So that kind of attitude that is exhibited to them rubs off, and you don't know I'll say knock on effect, but I mean that in a positive. You don't know how they tell two friends and so on and so on and so on. So there's nothing wrong with being nice and investing in someone's future at the same time.
For sure. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Good things come back to you. So that's how we want to do things. And, you know, it's, if you do most things the right way, right, you get that good karma back to you. And to your point, right, everybody speaks. The soccer world is such a small world. And I see it time and time again. And so, yeah, you hope that by treating players the right way, you know, other players tell players, agents tell other people, right? There's just a lot of goodwill out there by doing things the right way. And it seems so easy. And yet there's so many clubs that don't do it. So
why? Why do you think?
I think part of it is maybe they have people that were never in the player's shoes, mm-hmm. They don't understand, and they just view it as commodities, basically. You know, there's a business to run, and there's games to win, and butts to put in seats, and, you know, this is just a data point, and the data point can move on if we want them to, because we control things. And so, you know, I think some of that is in there, and they lose the human aspect of it and the benefit that we just spoke about of what can transpire if you do things the right way.
Do you see the same in mentoring? I mean, I know that you and Greg and your new charge, who is part of the Purple Women's team down in Central Florida, do you see that in mentoring, where mentors may see mentees as data points, or is there a genuine effort across the board to try in advance to make things better for those individuals that they touched? Do you see any mentors working with mentees as data points?
Not firsthand.
Good, because I wanted to ask that question, and I was hoping the answer was going to go a certain way, but go ahead.
Yeah, not that I've ever seen, and I don't know exactly how all the companies are run, and there's some big ones out there. So you hope not, for sure. But no, for us, it's about relationships. Definitely.
Has the word of mouth about how you and Greg handle things at BGM, has that rubbed off and given you mentees that you would not have anticipated getting otherwise?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our best, I mean, we don't do much marketing, So our best marketing is our current client base and them telling a teammate or a parent and word spreading and new clients coming in. So yeah, absolutely. So again, just being a good human. And back to your earlier question of why don't some teams do it? Because they don't have to. Because they've got the power. MLS has always had power and they haven't had to. It was such a classic example of like the American veteran, especially back in the day when I was a young player getting into the league and guys like Steve Ralston, Jay Heaps, Matt Reese, guys towards the end of their careers, sort of, MLS would just lowball them, knowing, okay, this guy's got a family. He's not making a lot of money. He's probably not going to want to move to make just a little bit more money. So, you know, we can get away with things. And that's the way it's been for a long time. Like, okay, let's do the bare minimum because that's what we have to do versus, hey, what's right?
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. Things have changed, right? Free agency has helped. And now there's a regard for the American player and, you know, even veterans and what they can bring to a team and things. So the league's in a much different place right now. Players have more power. And so, yeah, a lot of that has gone away, but some clubs have learned a little slower than others.
I want to, there are a couple of modern day news events that have happened in the sport that I want to kind of go over with you. I'm going to talk about them like later in the show because we've had some advancement in them. And I want to ask it within the framework of mentoring and, you know, looking at examples and, you know, good examples, bad examples of athletes and things like that. Have you had any mentoring sessions since the end of Leagues Cup?
So
basically this week up until now.
Yeah, I have.
And the reason that I ask is, and this is probably going to be something of a perpetual question, is have there been any conversations about what happened at the end of the match and what happened after the whistle blew?
Yeah, I put something out on social media about it and, you know, about being able to control our emotions and why it's so important and respect and, you know, being a good human being and how those things are important. And, you know, he's probably going to get away with it. But, you know, if you as a younger player do something like that, it could ruin your career. And, it could vanish quickly. And so I put something on social media about it. And yeah. I don't know how many people watch American football, but did you see it last night, John?
Yeah, I saw Jalen Carter basically, you know, bust out a loogie on Dak first play before the first snap even happens.
Unbelievable.
And then Jalen's walking off the field with a smirk on his face that apparently he doesn't at the moment didn't quite understand the repercussion of what was going on because there will be knock-on effects. And apparently there is now word out that Dak may have started it.
I listened to the interview and it sounded like Dak spit on the ground or something. And then Jalen took it as if he was getting spit at. So he spit, you know, but just in general, like being able to, even if you felt that someone spit towards you, right, being able to control yourself in this moment and realize this game and being a part of the team is so much bigger than me feeling disrespected in this little moment right now, right? I can get my revenge later in the game within the rules.
Get a receipt later, yeah.
You know, and same thing with Suarez. I mean, he obviously hasn't learned. It's not the first time. And, you know, he can apologize all he wants, but which is great. I'm glad that he did, but yeah, I really, really hope, but I have zero expectations that MLS will come down on him. And that's a shame because, you know, so many people watch him and Miami and, you know, and you see Messi during the whole thing, right? What's he doing?
Off to the side.
Couldn't care less about what's going on over there. Knows that it's childish, doesn't want a part of it, right? And you wonder why some people you know, are the best. And Suarez is so, so good. And he's unbelievably talented and has been for a really long time. But it's crazy that you can lose your mind in situations like that and not be able to control yourself. And it's such a skill, and it's an important skill for all realms of life.
When you have conversations with mentees, obviously not to the extent of a Luis Suarez moment like we had in Seattle, but do you watch tape on mentees? Do parents sit there and send you like videos like, okay, I have a concern. I need to bring my athlete kind of back to square when it comes to being a good person out there and being out there and competing and not being a honk about it. I'm for lack of a better term. I mean, do you have conversations where you kind of have to bring mentees back to reality a little bit?
Sometimes, not too often, honestly. Good. There's not too many mentees that send us video for us to look at. Some do. And we have had some conversations about attitudes out on the field and how to control emotions. And some players have been honest about, hey, I can't control myself, right? I'll just yell at a ref. And, you know, we try and talk about different ways to do it and how to handle it and ways to work on it, but not too often. But it is something that I see constantly, John, even at the MLS level. For example, there's different levels to it, right? Suarez is obviously a huge, high level. Right? But I was even watching highlights from Portland versus Cincinnati. It was a Vanders game back at Portland. And there's a turnover by a defensive midfielder for Portland. He's trying to play the striker. Center back Miazga steps in front of the pass. And the center midfielder stands there like, hey, striker, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Miazga passes the ball to Evander, who's standing right next to the guy who's going like this. Evander kind of turns, doesn't even touch the ball. First touch, bang, side netting, goal. And it's like reactions, right? Just so important. They're so important. And reactions on the field, off the field, controlling our ability to react and get on with things. It's just so important. And I see it all the time at the highest level. So I know for sure it's happening at the lower levels for sure.
Because you have athletes at the lower levels who look at the athletes at the higher level and they see that in a match, and I guess from there it is viewed as an accepted behavior. If like, well, if they're doing it, then I should be able to do it. That kind of a thing. And totally. When you're, you know, when you have that kind of behavior, what do you tell those mentees who might look at this and it's like, you know, instead of this, when they're doing all of the negative stuff, how do you try to turn those negatives around, or at least kind of shake them on the lapels a little bit and go, that's not how you're going to get things done. That's not how you're going to be productive here.
Yeah. We try and tell them to, hey, put yourself in the other person's shoes, right? Say you're the person who shot the ball instead of crossed it, or tried to cross it and you didn't make a good cross, and your striker turns around and is like giving you one of these or yelling at you. How's that going to make you feel? Mm-hmm. Is that going to help you play better? Is that going to help the team play better? No. And I get the frustration from that Portland player. Right? The striker was lazy and the center back just, right? But have a go at him later, right? There's a time and a place to sort things out, and the game doesn't stop for you and your emotions. And so, yeah, that's one way we kind of talk about things. But also I say, hey, go watch a women's game. Go watch an NWSL game. Their reactions are so much better than the men. So much better. I've rarely see a player in the NWSL MF a teammate or throw their hands up, have bad body language mm-hmm. towards a teammate.
Yeah.
Rarely. The difference is unbelievable.
And now that I'm processing that in my head, yeah, I mean, I legitimately cannot think, and I mean, I'm even thinking quickly at the international level where you're chasing after a world trophy and proper hydration. Yes, we like that. especially on a Friday. But I can't think of any level where I have seen, I mean, short of people getting mad at how, say, South American clubs might time waste and then they get you frustrated and that kind of a thing. But I can't think of, say, offensively in transition or any kind of moment like that where it's rare where if you are doing something like that, where you're MFing a teammate, you're doing this, you're directing traffic to no one in particular. I can't think of a moment short of coming from frustration where you're doing something like that.
Yeah. And so it's just a good example of you can still play at the highest level without that antics, without the bad body language, and still have good results and still play at the top level.
Do you show women's soccer to male mentees?
Yes, I'll show, it doesn't matter. Soccer is soccer. So I'll show NWSL to men. I'll show MLS to women. When we do our big group things, mm-hmm. it's NWSL and MLS clips. Doesn't matter who's in attendance. So yeah, we can learn from anything.
Yeah. I was just because if it made sense to watch a women's match, I didn't know if part of the individual study was to sit there and say, okay, here's what I've seen from you. You know, take a look at this and see how it's managed this way. And so that was, mm-hmm. That's kind of why I was asking that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's just, you hope that it's not a prevailing issue where you have the younger athletes looking at older athletes and thinking it's an accepted behavior. And that to me is one of the things that, it's like, really? And it comes across sometimes like you want to go down that path. You really like this person for what they're doing on the field. And it's just, I'm hoping it's not something that is increasing in number that you want to draw folks back. And it's like, look, focus on what got you here. Don't focus on all the histrionics and everything else that you see. Focus on being the great athlete and the great person. This individual is so far over at the end of the bell curve that they're not worth your time in certain aspects of it. I'm hoping that it's an issue that, you know, that you sit there and it's just like, put them off to the side. It is a bad example. It's an example of how to be bad about things, but it was just, it drove me crazy how what we saw in Seattle. I was hoping it's not an accepted behavior across the board. And I was wondering about mentees when it came to doing stuff like this.
Yeah. And I cannot believe it's been almost a week and we have yet to hear from MLS.
Mm-hmm. And or the League's Cup disciplinary committee.
Yeah, I mean, League's Cup is one thing. Mm-hmm. I get it. Who knows? Even Suarez plays next year.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think
MLS needs to come in with their own suspension, mm-hmm. effective immediately,
and
for X amount of games.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen it before with Petke, with his outburst, with Clint Dempsey. And his outburst where he ripped up the ref's notebook. Exactly. So, and Cuauhtemoc Blanco in Open Cup when he went berserk. So if Cuauhtemoc Blanco wants to come back, if Dempsey wants to come back and play in an Open Cup scenario, they still have to sit out of suspension. It would not surprise me if that was like it for Luis Suarez, because he's in the last year of his deal. All the big four are in their last years of their deals. There's no options to be picked up, and then they got to figure it out. So Suarez is just like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I'm out. So I'm just going to go ahead and, you know, not really care. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Fire me? You know, one of those kind of things.
Yeah. Wait till his last MLS game. That doesn't end well.
Yeah. No, I mean, that would be, yeah, whether it's a playoff game or what have you, when those situations, it's just, I'm anticipating, and this is the negative person in me, I'm thinking that this is it for Luis Suarez, and he's just like, yeah, whatever, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do my thing, and it's like, you know, come after me and chase me and do whatever. Send me the envelope, and I'm going to file a change of address kit, and you're not going to know where I am, and so it's not going to matter.
Yeah. I just really hope that MLS understands that younger people are watching, right? The younger generation is watching.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this goes unpunished, unpunished by me, I'm talking about MLS. I don't care about League's Cup.
Right.
League's Cup could suspend them for a year and I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. What's MLS doing?
Yeah.
So
I mean,
I really hope that MLS does something because, you know, I think it's a lesson that kids need to learn. And
I mean, Sergi Busquets does a short right to Obed Vargas.
He should be suspended as well.
And you had Maxi Falcone with it wasn't quite a rear naked choke, but it was a rear choke in the pile. And we were walking through the incident earlier this week, and we came up with like six players for Miami and two for Seattle that are probably going to get envelopes from that should get envelopes from the league office. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
That, I mean, cause it was out of control, and you had dudes with bibs who were taking swings and like choking folks. And that's just no. I don't know how else to say it, but just no, you know, that's not what you want to do. That's not the kind of image that you want to have when you have a team of superstars who are supposed to act a certain way. And then, and now you got me on my soapbox, acting a certain way and then acting like that when you have this expectation of, okay, look, you're a superstar, do your thing. Messi's off to the side. Busquets is doing short rights. And Luis Suarez is stomping on a security guy so he doesn't move, so he can wind up and go magic loogie on the guy. I mean, it's just like, what? How would you process that as an idea to do? That's the other thing to me. I mean, legitimately, I'm going to step on this guy's foot so he can't move, and then I'm going to hawk at him. I mean, where does that even come from? I'm stunned. I'm fired up. I mean, you got me all fired up again, dude.
Yep. Yeah, but to Abby's point, I mean, if a reserve player for Seattle or even Miami spit on a high profile player, done for the season.
Dunzo. Absolutely. Okay. I've borrowed you long enough. What's the latest with Beyond Gold?
What's the latest and greatest? We are sorting out our Thanksgiving camp and what we're doing there. We are hopefully later today having further conversations about a partnership with our first club team. So that would be awesome.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
In the Atlanta region. Oh. So that would be tremendous.
Yes, it was.
So yeah, big picture stuff. So yeah, it's going well.
Well, may the picture continue to get bigger, sir. Thank you for hanging out with us. Are you going to go out and play golf or are you working out?
I wish I could. I've got meetings from now until 1 and then working the grill tonight for Friday night football to help out the softball team.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know, let us know about the grill. And next time we catch up, we'll find out about Rhode Island. We'll find out about the grill, find out about mentoring. And hopefully, maybe if you want to break some news, you could do that with this club thing that you're working on. Just thinking.
Sounds good.
As always, my friend, great to see you. Thanks for hanging out with us and answering all of my questions and wandering down the road of mentors, mentees, and all the things. Be safe, my friend. Be well, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Always great to catch up with Cap as we go, and always great to catch up with Greg when they alternate, by the way. So sometimes it's Greg and it's Michael, and they'll alternate, and we catch up with whomever we catch up with on a weekly basis when they're not out conquering the planet. So it's always great to catch up with Greg and with Cap. This is the best of SDHAM on the SDH Network. Thanks for dropping by. John Nelson here with you. And once again, our fun conversation to wrap things up this week. More of an exploratory where Belize's national team, with a 39-year-old goalkeeper who is their captain, and some folks, if you are truly diehard in the lower divisions here in the United States, you might recognize some names. But they came to town, Belize national team, to take on Atlanta United 2 in a closed-door friendly. And so we catch up with the Minister of Youth and Sports from Belize, Devin Daly, and find out about the national team's place in everything going on in Belize and what they're hoping to achieve on the field and off from this trip.
I think I've got it. I think, Brooke, I've got it figured out. Okay, so they're setting up Devin's camera. All right, so this is the beauty of live. This is the beauty of live, live stuff. So I was going to bring in. I thought that, like I said, this is everybody sorting all this stuff out. So I'm looking at the green room. There we go. Okay, so let me see if it's safe to bring in Minister Daly, and we'll see what's going on. He is being properly hydrated. Minister Daly, how are you, sir? Oh wait, I can't hear you. We got to work on the audio. There it is.
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. Glad to catch up with you here as we wrap up a week, and I can't think of a better week to do it. This seems like it's been kind of a whirlwind for you. What's it like to have the national team up here to take on Atlanta United 2 tomorrow?
Well, it's an incredible opportunity. We have in the backdrop the guys getting their workout in, getting off that 3-hour flight coming up here. It's just a wonderful time to see the energy that they have and have some of the diaspora people come out here so that we can see a good match.
Now, for those that may not know, I wanted to give a bit of an education for the history of the program, recent things, and if I miss anything, please fill in the gaps. Charlie Slusher's the head coach, hired Correct. A little over a year ago. You've won 5 out of your 10, 5-4-1. You're playing, obviously, in CONCACAF, and you're trying to compete to get into the World Cup. Undefeated in 24 with Coach Slusher, 4 wins in the Nations League. And when you look at, say, the last year under Coach Slusher, what has it been like to see the advancement of the program to this point?
Well, I think the group of players have grown over the years. And I think one of the main parts that I would say is the maturity of the group, their style of play. It's not necessarily just a fast up and down. They're definitely trying to move the ball in a more mature way. And so I think that's what has been the main attribute to the success of the team.
And I know that your position as Minister of Youth and Sports, I mean, you were a hooper in your day. Can you still knock down the 15-footer?
Probably take that out to 25.
Oh, man, yeah. After my own heart, hitting the threes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
so we'll definitely see if we could get some open gym on the hoop side out here while we're out here.
No doubt. You work alongside, you know, since you're Minister of Youth and Sports, you work alongside the Minister of Sports to advance youth engagement and athletic programs across the country. What in a perfect world are you looking to accomplish by the time this tour is done, starting with this match tomorrow against Atlanta United 2? What would you like for people to see here and back home with this for this trip that you guys are on?
Well, for the people out here, we definitely want to see the professionalism that our players are exemplifying, and for the people back home, we want to inspire the youth. We want to let them know that there are opportunities for you to get exposure, to leave Belize and actually pursue a career in sport.
What has it been like for you to see the growth of sport there in Belize? We can talk about it from a soccer perspective. We can talk about it from soccer and other sports. Mm-hmm. But how many folks are involved and engaged in sports right now? And obviously you'd like to have that increase. And I would think that moments like this and this trip could help in that regard. What is participation like right now when it comes to youth and sports in the country?
I think sports naturally has that organic reach to youths, especially as a pastime for them to engage and kind of meddle in outside school activity. However, I think one of the main things that we're aiming for is to increase the overall organization of sports in Belize for youths, and that ongoing collaboration with the federations. That is something that hasn't necessarily been optimal. However, you know, with the organization, myself, Minister Mala, and the team behind the spring, we're hoping that, you know, that is the direction we go. Because like I always tell people, funding constraints isn't everything. You need to have organization before the funding gets in order.
What kind of help do you need to help grow that, whether domestically or mm-hmm. worldwide? What kind of help do you need to continue to grow?
Well, the main thing is we need to increase our capacity for coaching. We need to increase our capacity when it comes to partnerships outside and abroad. So we're calling on whichever partners are willing, come and train our people so that they can actually deliver the necessary skill sets that our locals need.
How difficult a process is that when it comes to recruiting, so folks can come down and aid and assist the next generations of athletes? How difficult a process is it, and what has interest been like so far?
Well, the interest is high, especially with new persons being at the head of the helm. However, I think the main thing is our people, they're always open to learn. They're willing. And I just think overall genuine interest coming in to say, hey, this is not a one-off training. This is not a one-off opportunity. And on our end, we're definitely willing to accommodate that, whatever that may involve.
How far back was the planning process for this particular trip with the national team mm-hmm. to have this moment with Atlanta United 2? How far back are we talking here?
Well, I know the partnership was for 2 years, and this is the first time the team is actually coming up, so on year two. But I think this has been in the process for probably about 10-11 months.
Wow. Yeah. For those that may not know, the roster, keeper Woodrow West, he's going to be the cap. Where's been wearing the captain's armband. Leads active roster, 46 caps, fifth on the all-time appearance list. Carlos Bernardes, Jordi Polanco, 15 combined goals, second and third on the team's all-time list, respectively. I want to say that there have been times in the past. Deshaun Nemhard, I think, was a part of the national team that folks might remember, second division here in the U.S.?
Yep, he's out here too.
Okay, so second and third division, Deshaun Nemhard is a part of it. So there are some names that are familiar for the casual fan dropping in. And so I think that it's going to be an interesting experience for folks to just drift in and watch. What is from what you've been able to gather from the team itself, what is their expectation coming out here? Obviously, you're at the Children's Health Care Atlanta Training Ground. It's a great facility. You're going to be getting the best when it comes to the pool and the gym and the bikes and all that kind of stuff. What is the expectation of Coach Slusher and the team with this friendly?
We had that conversation last night at dinner. I'll just say that they're expecting a very good showing, not something lopsided. So I won't put the pressure on the guys by necessarily giving out numbers, but we definitely have high hopes.
Well, and I mean, that's the fun part in doing all of this. Where when did you fly up?
We got here yesterday about 6 p.m.
Okay, so you got a little acclimated. How long a flight was it?
It was 3 hours.
Wow. Okay. That's not bad.
Yeah. A lot of bumps, right? A lot of bumps along the way. So, you know, hopefully that doesn't affect the guys' legs too much.
Yeah. are they looking forward to, how long are you staying? I guess is the next question.
We're staying until Monday. So we fly back Monday morning.
Okay. So then the match happens. If match is done, then what is Sunday going to be like? Is it just chilling, going to the mall? What do the guys want to do?
They want to explore a bit, but I think we're definitely going to have a post-game recap, you know, to kind of discuss, you know, some of the best practices against the team that they found. And then after that, of course, they want to explore a bit.
And is there anything that you have been recommended to go and explore? The guys said, okay, well, you got to go here, do this, and do this.
Nah, not as yet, nothing like that. Maybe you could share.
Well, I mean, are you looking for food? Are you looking for what are you looking for? Because we can go down this road a little bit. What are you looking for?
Let's go down the road for food.
Okay. Traditionally, you've got good American barbecue. There's always places to go for that. I'm trying to think. So you've got a sample, good Southern cooking, good home cooking here in the Southeast. I would say barbecue probably would be a good idea. Okay. Are you staying close to the training ground, or where are you staying?
We're about 10 minutes away from the training ground.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that was about 20 minutes or 25 from the airport. So
okay.
It's one circle.
Okay. So it's not too bad. So you take the perimeter freeway and you just kind of go like that and you go to the airport. Okay. So
correct.
All right. So we got to figure out like barbecue restaurants or good Southern cooking. Okay, so probably what you need to do tomorrow morning, well, for breakfast is probably go to a place called Martin's, because that's up
Martin's.
There. In Martin's, that's good breakfast. That's good. That's good up there in Cobb County. So you might need to send somebody to go make a breakfast run to Martin's and get food and bring it back to everybody. So that's good Southern cooking. That's good breakfast. It's good portions and it's good stuff. So Martin's for breakfast, and then we've got to figure out something barbecue-y or Southern cooking for after the match and then tomorrow on Sunday. So that'll be so that's on the list. So we'll start you off with Martin's for breakfast and then we'll work our way forward. How about that?
That sounds good.
Okay. What else do folks need to know about what's going on in Belize that you want to talk about, whether it's about youth and sports, the soccer team, the national team? What else do folks need to know that I haven't hit this morning?
Let me see. I'll probably end with this. There's nothing, and I'll quote Minister Mahler with this. There's nothing in a nation that galvanizes their people like how sports does. Mm-hmm. And the youths are not necessarily our future. The youths are now. And so whatever investments, whatever resources are needed and whatever organization is needed to bring sport to a level where it's sustainable, where it's efficient, and where it's inclusive, we're willing to do it. And we definitely have great plans ahead, not just facility development, but also the human resource part.
And as things continue to grow, please accept this as an open invitation to come on the morning show. Mm-hmm. And we can continue to talk about how things are growing with national team and things like that as you continue to make your strides in CONCACAF going forward. Minister Devin Daly, Minister of Youth and Sports from Belize, here as a part of the traveling party that's going to be taking on Atlanta United 2 tomorrow morning, Belize national side. It's going to be fun. ATLUTD.com/live. It's a great education. You've parachuted in to play this match, and you're going to be hanging out for a Sunday before you head back on Monday. Please be safe. Please enjoy your time. Enjoy what's going on tomorrow morning. We will catch up with you soon. Thanks for dropping by the morning show on the shortest of short notices. And we'll be catching up with you soon. Good luck tomorrow. We'll catch up with you soon, my friend.
Thanks, John.
You get the chance to listen to and watch the friendly with Belize and Atlanta United 2 at ATLUTD.com/live. Jason and the Hoff, Joe Freihoffer on the call for you. 10 o'clock Eastern time on your Saturday. That is the best of SDHAN this week for the SDH Network. John Nelson here for John and for Jason Longshore, for Jarrett Smith, for Maddie Cruz, Sophia Cupertino, and Nick Alifi. Thanks for coming by as you always do and are a part of our universe. Thanks again to Casey White. Thanks to Michael Parkhurst. And thanks to the Minister of Youth and Sports from the nation of Belize, Devin Daly, breaking things down this week. We'll be back at it again next week to find out what's going on around the planet and let you know as well on the best of SDHAM here at the Off the Woodwork podcast section at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Feel free and come on and listen and be a part of our family at 9:05 every Monday through Friday on the SDH Network on YouTube, on X, and on Twitch. So you can hang out with us and let us know what's going on in your world as we catch you up on everything going on in the world of soccer. For everybody at SDH, that is another go-round of SDHAM. Play it safe, everybody. Enjoy your weekends. We'll catch back up with you next week.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and their team.
telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.